Can our attitudes make us sick? Can they help us get well? Welcome to The Good Word. I'm Alton Thompson, your host on this series on health and healing. Conversation partners are health professionals in the Walla Walla Valley, Carl Bauer, MD with a specialty in gastroenterology and a master's in nutrition, and Donna Chin, an RN, registered dietitian, and also has a master's in nutrition. Our theme today is faith and healing. And let's go to that question that I just tossed out. To what extent does our attitude of mind bring sickness upon us? And to what extent can our attitude turn us around and point us towards healing? Can you give us any help on that? That's a very broad question, and I can be more specific if I need to.
What comes to mind is a quote that I heard from Mrs. White from many years ago, that 90% of disease begins in the mind. And initially up front, that sounds kind of a lot. But once you begin understanding the impact of the mind on the hormones and blood counts and all the other variety of biochemical indices that are in the body, and the research that's now bearing that out, it's a fascinating study, actually, to find out how interrelated what happens in the mind is with what happens in the body.
One quotation I have is later when we come to nutrition. A fascinating quote from Ellen White to a person who is way too preoccupied by their diet. She says, if you think your food will hurt you, it most assuredly will. The attitudes that we bring. So let's maybe start, first of all, on the negative side. What kind of negative attitudes in the mind are most detrimental to health? Fear, guilt, depression. I'm not sure if there's anything you can do about depression directly. What about those more immediate emotions? Fear. Is that a two-edged sword, or is that mostly negative?
I think there is good evidence to show that the hormones that are released in the body by stress and by fear, the fight or flight hormones, epinephrine and norepinephrine and a number of other hormones that are the fight or flight hormones, that these do deplete the body of energy. And they also eventually change the brain's ability to perceive pain. And so the pain threshold is lowered. And we now know that the disease fibromyalgia is probably related to the fact that people have a loss of the major hormones that make us tick. And that those individuals can recover with appropriate maneuvers to bring peace and rest and hope and a positive attitude, because these individuals have a very high incidence of depression, very high incidence of psychosomatic illnesses like irritable bowel syndrome and so on. And so I believe that there is evidence that negative mindset does produce clinical disease.
Now, your comment there about fear, it's kind of like almost a drug addiction. You need more and more to get the same reaction.
Right. And you eventually use up the neurotransmitters in the brain that are necessary for a balanced adjustment to life. Mm-hmm. And as you run out of dopamine, for instance, is the primary pleasure hormone or neurotransmitter, then you're left with an adaptation that is abnormal. And minor stimuli that before would not have bothered you a great deal now become very painful, and you become incapacitated.
Mm. I remember a number of years ago, I had a student who was, you might say for religious or psychological reasons, really into last day events. And he liked this frenzy. But he told me, the point that he was talking to me, how he needed more and more excitement to get the same level. And as it went on, finally there came a place where he couldn't get any more. And he told me, he says, it even destroyed my ability to appreciate the Sabbath. So it not only destroyed his overall perspective, but even those things that were very precious to him as a believer simply disappear. Now, let's go to the positive side. What are the most helpful things in terms of mindset? And maybe we ought to say, what are things that we can actually do here? Because I'm not sure how much we can actually control our emotions. It's like, if I ask you to laugh on command or to cry on command, that's not possible. But are there things that we can do that would contribute to the positive emotions that would contribute then to good health? When you see a patient and you want that patient to get well, what attitudes do you, are you most eager to see develop? What emotions in that patient?
Well, first of all, you want them to have a positive attitude.
Mm-hmm.
Positive attitudes raise the levels of endorphins in the brain, and they do a lot of good things for us. Everybody knows about Norman Cousins and his experiments when he had a devastating illness and learned what a positive effect laughter and joy had on his symptoms, and how he eventually overcame this really serious illness he had by listening to funny movies and had people read to him funny stories. And as he was able to really develop genuine laughter, it really helped his system to improve. And I think that's been shown now in many, many good studies, that a positive attitude and a positive outlook creates the environment in which the body's immune system can function more effectively.
Mm. Donna, do you have any PS on that?
I discovered in teaching a stress management course last winter with students that the whole attitude element and the positive attitude was directly impacted by their participation in giving, if you will, giving their time and in focusing on something outside of their own immediate stressors. So to raise their spirits, they discovered that what they initially thought was going to stress them out, that is, spending time doing something they didn't have time to do in giving to the community, actually gave back to them in ways they did not at all expect.
You know, in that connection, I saw a New York Times column in which they were saying that giving ranks right up there with food and sex as giving the most satisfaction. In fact, they kind of tongue-in-cheek said that it's the most selfish thing you can do is to give. And I wasn't even sure there was such a thing as, you know, disinterested benevolence, you know, because it's so much fun to give. So that is something you can do, place people in a position where they can actually give in a positive way. Yeah. Let me go to another question. When we talk about healing and intervention of divine power on our behalf, it's quite clear from Scripture, even though believers don't want to admit it, that you cannot predict the outcome. The illustrations that I like to use, Peter was delivered from prison, Acts 12. But at the beginning of that same chapter, Herod killed James. In Hebrews 11, this was an even more striking. By faith, some escaped the edge of the sword. Go down a few verses. By faith, some were killed by the sword. Now, that ability to roll with the punches and to expect, not to expect deliverance, but to be ready for whatever happens. Is that a key factor in good mental health and good healing? To simply not demand healing, but simply say, whatever the Lord's will, that will happen?
Don't you think that's really what the definition of faith is? I mean, to have faith and then trust that with God, regardless of what happens, yeah, is having confidence in an unseen end, hoping for the best, but at the same time realizing that we're not in control. God is in control, and he can bring about his ends in a lot of different ways, many of which don't look good to us right now, but in the long run are good.
Yeah. I've been amazed by how many people have told me after dark that their most important and most valued lessons they've learned are from the difficult times in life. It's really tremendous growth there. But I wish I could find a better way of helping, because there are some people who simply seem more naturally inclined to worry. There's a funny, we don't have a lot of time on this one, but in Matthew 6, for example, Sermon on the Mount, Jesus says, don't worry. Gentiles worry. Beck says, don't worry about tomorrow. You got enough troubles for today, which is a very interesting wrinkle. Paul says, rejoice in the Lord always. And again, I will say rejoice. Let your gentleness be known to everyone. The Lord is near. Do not worry about anything. But when you go to 2 Corinthians 11, there he admits, after a list of long lists of problems, he says, besides that, I'm under the daily pressure of my worries for all the church. So let's take a few moments here to talk about, what about those who worry that they worry? They'd rather not worry, because Paul says you're not supposed to worry, so cheer up. But they worry anyway. Is there a tension that we can learn to live here between the ideal and the reality of everyday life?
I don't think we'd be human if we didn't have concerns for others.
Yeah.
I think where we have come to terms with our humanity is when we can figure out how to let go and let God. And I think that for many of us, that will be a tension the rest of our lives. That said, I think one of the most commonly, one of the things that's said most commonly in Scripture is, do not fear, do not fear, do not fear. And what is worry if it is not fear? Mm-hmm. And yet I think we find that a very difficult command to oblige, really. And because we are naturally given to fear, and I think that Satan would have us be so. And faith and worry have a difficult time coexisting.
Yeah, that's right. Now, one other factor here, and that has to do with the direct intervention of the miraculous, and again, we don't have very much time to be able to deal with this one. But in a world where science gives rational explanations, it's quite clear to me that from Scripture and also from real life, there are times where events happen under the control of the Lord that we simply cannot explain. Maybe I could tuck in just this one quotation here from C.S. Lewis, and probably the best essay I know of on, it's The Efficacy of Prayer, the best one I know of on intercessory prayer. He quotes a Christian as saying, I've seen many striking answers to prayer, and more than one that I thought miraculous. They usually come at the beginning, or conversion or soon after. As the Christian life proceeds, they tend to be aware of refusals to become more frequent and more unstable. I wish we had time to pursue that, but time is up. Pick it up next week. My thanks to both of you, and my thanks to Michael White, our program engineer, to all of you for listening in, for the good work. I'm Alden Thompson. For those of you who would like to have access to Good Word recordings, let me point you in the direction of the website for Positive Life Radio, plr.org. That way you can access programs, find the Good Word, and you can listen happily ever after.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.